Hi, this is Steve. Back in 1989, my brother and I created a game with Stoss, the game creator, for the Atari ST. It was not a great game by any means, but it resulted in our first finished piece of software, Zamboozle Poker Dice. The game lay dormant on floppy disks for 30 years until we unearthed it in 2020, updated it for the Atari STE. At that time, we also created a somewhat tongue-in-cheek user manual for the game, which was also written as a history of its development. There's a video about that game and about how Stoss, the game creator, helped people like us get our start and forge careers in the world of software development.
Programmed in BASIC, we explored 8-bit worlds. Pixels crashed onto a digital shore. All our records were scratched. Left alone, we were latchkey children, terrified of nuclear war. In the glow of the cathode ray, every game we play on our 2600. Into the vertical blank, our highest scores have been ranked.
This instruction manual covers version 1.0 from 1989 and 1.2 from 2020. Limited warranty. Wheat Media warrants the diskette on which the enclosed program is recorded will be free of defects for 30 days after purchase. Wheat Media makes no warranties, either express or implied, as to the software program recorded on the diskette. The program is provided as is with no warranty whatsoever. This means, if the game sucks, sorry, you own it. The software store you bought this from most likely does not accept returns of open packages. Why? Because there is a good chance you and or your friends are dirty software pirates who like to buy games, copy them, then try to return them. Furthermore, if you are reading this, you already opened the package and you're out of luck. However, if you have access to a shrink wrap machine, then you might get away with rewrapping it and trying for a return. Good luck and Godspeed. Requirements. The enclosed software program is designed to run on an Atari ST brand computer. It requires at least 512K of memory, a disk drive, color monitor, mouse, and the TOS 1.02 operating system. If you are running on an Atari STE computer, the 1.2 version may be the only version that works for you. Check the manual that came with your computer to make sure your system is compatible before calling customer service. Most problems are user error and not the fault of Wheat Media, its employees, leadership, or shareholders. If there is a problem with the game, you can lay blame squarely on the shoulders of the lame coders who made it. You can find their names on the credit page in the back of this manual. Acknowledgements. This game was made using Stoss the Game Creator, released in 1989 by Mandarin Software and developed by JAWX. We, the programmers, were compelled to program games ever since playing Asteroids in 1979. Books like Dr. C. Wacko's Miracle Guide for the Atari 8-bit helped us learn the basics of programming when we were teenagers, but it wasn't until we were fumbling around in college in 1989 and Stoss arrived for the Atari ST that we were able to get moving on the dream to make video games. Stoss combined a simple-to-learn basic programming language, sprite editor, sound designer, and a compiler. The whole system finally allowed us as neophyte coders to finally turn our ideas and creations into honest-to-God compiled Atari ST games. However, tools and desire are not the only ingredients needed for success. And as you will see with the final version of Zamboozle Poker Dice you are holding in your hands, sometimes the final product, no matter how hard someone works, maybe should never see the light of day.
So Zamboozle Poker Dice was a game that Steve and I created we started in about 1989 when we got Stoss. We probably finished it the same year. We had always been very, very enamored with the game Yahtzee. We wanted to make our own, but we always thought the Yahtzee scorecard was a little limited, so we wanted to add a few items. We added a few, but we also wanted to jazz it up with graphics and sound, and we did.
2020 update. The 1.2 2020 version has been updated to work with all TOS versions. We've also updated some of the music and sounds. Introduction. Zamboozle Poker Dice from Wheat Media, which, by the way, was our joke name for a fake company in high school, then the joke name of our two-song rock band, then the joke name of this one-game company, and one day became the name of our first short-lived web design firm. Zamboozle Poker Dice is an exciting new take on the classic game of poker dice. The game is for one or two players. Each player takes turns rolling a set of five dice and attempts to make poker hands based on the number rolled. On their turn, the player gets the opportunity to roll the dice three times. After each roll, the player can choose dice to re-roll. The others will remain unrolled. The objective is to make poker hands with the dice. After the third roll, the player must choose a poker hand to which they will apply their dice. With one exception, second Zamboozle, all poker hands can only be used once. Starting a game. Put the Zamboozle Poker Dice diskette into your compatible Atari ST 3.5 inch disk drive and click the floppy disk icon that represents the drive where you inserted the disk. This is usually floppy A or floppy B. Notice, Zamboozle Poker Dice includes no copy protection, so the files can be installed on a hard disk drive, such as the Megafile 20. To install on a hard disk drive, simply copy the files from the enclosed Zamboozle Poker Dice diskette to a folder on the hard disk drive. I suppose this also means you can easily upload the game to your favorite BBS, you dirty software pirate. We have tested version 1.2 on all TOS versions and on both GemDOS, IDE, and the ASCII hard drive hooked up to a real STE, and both Atari and Steam emulators. When you see the program named zam.prg for the 1.0 version or zam2020.toss for the 1.2 version, double-click and prepare to experience the absolute wonder that is Zamboozle Poker Dice.
And so what we did was we took all the tools that TOS provided and we made to the best of our ability at the time, used those tools, including TOS Maestro, the sprite designer, Degas Elite for Steve to draw a title screen that was hilarious. And as much as we could, we built this game with as much as we could throw in. Fireworks show that kind of mimicked the fireworks show from Pele's soccer when you get an actual Yahtzee, which we call a Zamboozle. We had Steve strum the guitar, and then we used a function of TOS, that Maestro, that allows you to change the pitch of that sample so we could actually make music out of it. We played those in a row, which is actually a feature of the language. Welcome. Where you can make music based on various samples, which is really cool. But if you move the mouse in between the samples, it will slow them down.
So, yeah, dude, that's right.
Next, the title screen will appear. Do not be shocked. Yes, this is the title screen. This is what happens when a couple of twin brothers with a lot of ambition and very little talent attempt to make their first game. See Second Game Theory at the end of the manual for more information. After a few seconds, the second title screen will appear. We couldn't decide which one to use, and one of us, me, really liked this Zamboozle Man character, so we put him here. Also, this screen has a second logo not related to one on the title screen. Did you read that note about warranties back on page 1? Yeah, this is one of the things we were referring to. Click the left mouse button in version 1.0, or press a key, 1.2, to start the game. The main game screen will load up, and a message will appear asking you to choose the number of players. It's quite possible that back in the 80s, you might have had another person there with you to play this game. So if you have a time machine and 1989 is your target year, have at it. Otherwise, you are probably emulating this game on a laptop computer or you finally got a surplus 1040 ST running in your garage. Either way, there's an almost 100% chance you are alone. So don't kid yourself. Just choose one player. When you do, you will see a confirmation box like this one. It says, one player, are you sure, yes or no? Nearly every choice in this game is followed by a confirmation box, such as this. I suppose we are trying to be user-friendly and wanted to make sure all aspects of the game could be confirmed by the user. What if real life was like that? What if all of your choices came with a confirmation box that let you think twice before committing? Maybe I would have taken computer science or played college soccer if I had been prompted by a pop-up modal dialog box to think twice about my snap decisions in my youth. Hey, did someone mention a time machine? Anyway, these damn confirmation boxes are all over the place and I won't mention them again. Rolling the dice. Click on the big roll button to roll the dice. You will be clicking with the mouse pointer that looks like a pencil. Why a pencil, you ask? Well, for two reasons. 1. Because in the physical game of poker dice, you use a pencil to record your score on a scorecard. 2. Because we had the ability to change the mouse pointer into a cool graphic, so we painstakingly drew a pencil for you. I hope you like it. After clicking, you will see an animation of dice rolling in the lower right corner of the screen. We were really proud of this animation back in 1989, and I still think it looks pretty cool. Anyway, the final roll of the dice will appear in the top window, sorted numerically from lowest to highest. Selecting dice to reroll. After you roll, you have the chance to select dice to reroll. Simply hover your mouse cursor pencil over the die you don't want to keep and click the left mouse button. The die will turn into a multicolored block. If you make a mistake, click again and the die will reappear. If that was the second mistake, then click again and the box will reappear. Keep doing this until you get really bored and want to move on to the next step. Click the roll button to roll the dice you selected. On your second roll, you have the option to select some or all of the dice to reroll again. After your second reroll, you must choose a hand to apply your dice. You do not have to roll 3 times. At any time, you can click the stay button and apply your dice to the poker hand on the score sheet. Apply the dice to the poker hand. When you click on one of the poker hand options on the score sheet, you will be presented with a screen that asks you, "Are you sure?" I know. I said I wouldn't mention these annoying screens again, but this one is really important. You really should think about the hand to which you will apply your dice. See the strategy tips section for some things to consider. If you click yes, your score will appear and your turn will be over. Scoring options. The options for scoring in Zooboozle Poker Dice mostly follow the rules of poker. The top 6 scoring options are for multiples of the same die, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, or 6. A score above 63 in this section will net the player a bonus on the scorecard. The next section is filled with options for various specialized poker hands. 1 pair. Use this option when you have at least 2 dice with the same value. Note, this is new to Zooboozle Poker Dice. 2 pair. Use this option when you have 2 sets of dice, each with the same value. Note, this is also new to Zooboozle Poker Dice. 3 of a kind. Use this option when you have at least 3 dice of the same value. 4 of a kind. Use this option when you have at least 4 dice of the same value. Full house. Use this option when you have 3 dice of the same value and the other 2 dice of a different same value. Small straight. Use this option when you have at least 4 dice with consecutive numbers. 1, 2, 3, 4, 2, 3, 4, 5, 3, 4, 5, 6. Large straight. Use this option when all 5 dice are in succession. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, or 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Zamboozle. Use this option if all 5 dice are the same. Getting a Zamboozle will start an animated sequence that can only be described as sublime. While it's not great, it was still maybe the highlight of the first 10 years of my attempts at programming. Second Zooboozle. Use this option for the second Zooboozle. Don't use it for the first. If you do, you will get 0 points. If you do get a second Zooboozle, you will be treated to the above-mentioned animation one more time. Enjoy. Chance. This is a fallback space. You get points no matter what are on the die. Your score is the sum of the dice. Use it wisely. Blackjack. This is a special space for playing a hand of blackjack against a computer. See the special options section for details. Aside from the new scoring options on the score sheet, Zooboozle Poker Dice includes a few other new surprises for anyone familiar with the classic game of poker dice. The blackjack hand plays like a short, interactive version of the casino card game of the same name, where 21 is the best possible score. Keep an eye on the total displayed below your dice. When it's near or exactly 21, click stay. Click stay if you're on your first or second roll, then click the blackjack option on the score sheet. The Inferno program will ask you, "Are you sure?" But since there is no bloody hell of course option, just click yes. The computer will now roll the dice. You will see the dice animated in the lower window. If the total score of your dice is higher than that of the dealer, and 21 or under, then you win. Otherwise, you get zilch. Another new addition to Zooboozle Poker Dice is Wild Play. Wild Play gives you a second chance after your third roll. You only get to use Wild Play once during a game, so make it count. When you click Wild Play, the possible awards are +5 to the top score, plus 10 to total score, roll again, and zilch, and they appear randomly. Roll again is usually the best option as it lets you get one more chance at getting that perfect poker hand you are trying for.
And it's the first piece of software that allowed us to actually make a real game and compile it. So
that wasn't a construction kit of any kind.
Yeah, it was kind of a construction kit, but it was actually...
Well, no, you have to program everything. And then they had some... It had a library of tools like sprite builders and things.
I mean,
but it wasn't a construction kit.
We did make a few things in BASIC on the Atari 100 and put them on BBSs to get download credits. And we did upload a lot of pinball construction set, pinball machines, which were amazing. I mean, they're not amazing to play, but it was amazing to be able to do it and export an EXE
to play them. No, it's just that, speaking of those pinball machines, if you search on the word pin on Homesoft, which is on Homesoft, our site for Atari 800 games, there are a couple hundred pinball machines listed. I didn't look through them all, but I'm wondering if any of ours are on. So it may be something to look at for one of these times, because I haven't been able to. I did not see it, but I'm thinking they must have made it around, because we uploaded them to BBSs but sent them everywhere.
A note on sounds. If you're playing the game along with these instructions, no doubt you have heard a few things coming from your computer speaker that either gave you pause or made you jump in your seat. Don't worry, that specter you and the local vicar drove out a few years ago has not returned. It's just the game, silly. Like I stated in the acknowledgements, when we made this game back in 1989, we used a very cool program named Stoss, the game creator, published by Mandarin Software and developed by JawX. Stoss made our dream of making this game a reality, for which we are truly indebted. One of the cool things about Stoss was that it had an optional sound digitizer called Stoss Maestro that would let a developer record their own sampled audio to use in the game. As you may or may not know, sampled audio can take up a lot of space on a 3.5-inch 740K floppy disk. We had big plans for this game, and save for a few system sounds, nearly every sound you hear was digitized by a couple of neophytes with absolutely zero experience in sound editing. That out-of-tune guitar? That's me strumming. That ARG you hear when you get a zero score? That's my brother. When we realized the game only topped out at 160K compiled, we planned to update with more sounds, but then tragedy struck. The Stoss Maestro cartridge stopped working, and we didn't have the money to replace it. We just decided then to go with what we had so we could get the game completed. There was no option to turn off the sound, but you can always reach over to your SD monitor and turn the sound off, or put on some headphones. Your choice. We are truly sorry about the sound. Note, if you're running the 2020 released 1.2 version of the game, some of the sound warping has been fixed, and the music has been swapped out. It turns out it wasn't just low-quality samples that were the issue. It was the mouse interrupts. If you moved the mouse while playing the sounds, it would slow their playback and distort them.
The original version of this, we made this whole thing. We worked on it for probably a year while we were going to school. We liked it. This is basically, we had done some basic programming on the Atari 800. We barely knew how to make a game loop, but we figured it out. We figured out what we had to do. And then it also had to be sort of event-based, because you had to be able to click on things at various times. And so we actually looked up how to do like reusable code. It was only like Go subs in Stoss. But when I went back and looked at the code now, for all of the sounds that we played, we basically set some variables before and then passed them in, and we made like a sample player that was based on variables you passed in quotes. You didn't really pass anything, you just set them before. We did a lot of usable code like that. And then at the very end, we even slapped in a two-player mode. So we actually made it like a thing where if player equals two, then you get two players. P equals two or something. And the thing is, I thought that was like a terrible way to do it at the time. That's the way you do it.
High score. At the end of the game, you will get the chance to enter your name and a quote if you happen to have beaten the high score. Since there are only two known disc images of Zamboozle in existence, you might see a screen that looks like this. It says the king, name, Jeff. Score, 522. Date, 11/27/1991. 84% of the maximum score. Message from the king. I am the king. Which I believe is a reference to a local mattress commercial from 1991. The current high score of 522 was set in late 1991 by my brother Jeff. The score is nearly impossible to beat. I know. I've tried off and on for the last 30 years. If you do beat it and care enough to send me an email at steveafulton@gmail.com, I'd love to see it. Note, in the 1.2 2020 version, Jeff has replaced the high score with one that is lower and easier to beat. Strategy tips. You do not need to use all three of your rolls. If you have good dice on the first or second roll, click stay and get your score. If you have the dice for a small straight, but have more rolls, always keep rolling the single die that is not in the small straight in case you can make a large straight. Keep your eye on the die total. If you have 21, hit the blackjack right away. That is 45 points you don't want to miss. Try to save the chance option for the last possible moment. It's a nice fallback for when you're going for that elusive Zamboozle. Aces and one pair are good spots to leave a zero as a last resort. Save wild play as long as you can. Near the end of the game, it could be an invaluable resource to help fill out some of those harder spots on the score sheet. Coming soon from Wheat Media in the 1990s, Oxygen, a furious shooter-up battle with the periodic table of elements itself. Gunfa Racing, a space-themed horse racing simulator. The Legend of Queen Calafia, a role-playing game set in California. Battle myths, legends, and history itself to discover the treasure buried at the heart of the Golden State. RPG 1987, working title. A modern-day role-playing game. Battle the forces of evil and their alien overlords to free the world from their dastardly clutches. Design sketches only. Note, none of these games are ever finished. The limitations of our skills with STOS and the real-world implications of needing to find our place in the world both combined to end our Atari ST game careers before they got started. Zamboozle Poker Dice was finished in 1989, but very few people ever saw it. The code and game were buried within the mounds of 3.5-inch disc boxes that held our other Atari ST software.
But I think I remember packaging up a version and thinking I sent it to ST format. But we never got a response at all. And as I recall, possibly that didn't happen.
No, I think we tried to, but I'm not sure that it actually happened. Like, I'm not sure if we actually did it. Like, we wanted to send it.
I don't remember us putting it in an international envelope and or knowing how to put stamps. I mean, I was like 19 at the time. I should have known how to put stamps on something and send it, but it would be an international package to send. And I'm not quite sure we did that. Now, what it could have been is we sent it to Antic or Start or ST Log, and at the time they just weren't doing STOS stuff, and they weren't even just putting games on their thing. They were kind of like you had to teach people to program, and that would have been an easy one to send in the US. The other ones would be more difficult, and I don't know what we did and why it even would have been ST format, because they didn't do much STOS stuff in there. Yeah, I guess they did a good amount of STOS stuff in there. In any case, it just died. Let's just put it this way: it died.
Not long after, in 1992, we traded up our 1040 Atari ST for a DOS Windows 386 DX40. While we planned to continue learning to program and make games for DOS, the system just did not seem as fun or creative as the Atari ST once did. In time, we gave up on game development, realizing that want and desire to make games, while important, cannot fully replace talent and skill.
So what's funny is that STOS was the first thing that we were able to use to make something that
I think it was
worthwhile, like put back into the system.
It was revolutionary for this thing. It wasn't. We had made stuff with Pinball Construction Set. We had written a bunch of basic stuff. We actually had written a couple games where we had copied some machine language code in data statements and dropped it in so you could maybe do a few little things, but never a lot of animation, just little things. But we had never got to, and I actually wanted to get like some of the game creators. There was the arcade construction set and stuff like that. But STOS was the first thing that actually was a full programming language that would do things besides let you just do code. So I had done a game like Zamboozle called Zamfear Poker Dice in GFA Basic for just the black and white monitor. I can't find that anywhere. I may have on a disc, but I actually don't have a disc drive now to get it off of. But that's okay.
We took
everything from that and put it into this version. We could actually do graphics and sounds and stuff. And what we were more interested in than the actual hardcore programming, like, was not interested in learning the hardcore assembly language, because I wanted to make a game. I didn't want to learn assembly language. To me, there were two absolutely different things.
Yeah, no, I always felt, you know, I mean, games back then, and even now doing the homebrew stuff, it's like, I have a desire to learn how to do stuff from the metal and the do it from the core and the assembly language. But at the same time, I also have a desire to make things. And there's a difference sometimes between wanting to create something and get something done that I'm really proud of and actually doing it from the super most detailed technical level. And I usually side with, you know what, I'd rather just write it in like 1700 BASIC and be able to be creative with the graphics and stuff and spend my time making music and working on gameplay and stuff like that than trying to make it, you know, a highly technical implementation. And maybe that makes me some kind of tech loser or something, but I just enjoy the creation
tech part. Loser.
Sorry. Yeah, I know. I enjoy the creation part more than...
Right. I think the fact that you could make things with it that were... the output of it was pretty easy to get something cool out of it, not just spend years learning how to add two numbers in assembly language, right? Like, it's cool in itself.
It got over the hump. It just took a long time. And I always sided with the stuff that allowed me to make things. So that's what I liked about STOS.
In the mid-1990s, the World Wide Web emerged. Early websites were a combination of simple graphics plus HTML and CGI coding. Those technologies were perfect for our small but growing set of software development skills. In many ways, it felt like the experience of programming 8 and 16-bit computers in the 80s prepared us directly for the connected world of the 90s World Wide Web. Animated GIFs were nothing more than the types of multi-frame animations we made for Zamboozle on the ST. The event-based programming in STOS was a perfect primer for the GUI, user-centric world of the World Wide Web. While Zamboozle Poker Dice itself never amounted to much, as it turned out, the experience of making that game was invaluable for our future. Around the year 2000, my twin brother and I were both working at Mattel Toys, making consumer websites for their various brands like Barbie and Hot Wheels. At the same time, a little animation plugin for web browsers named Macromedia Flash was taking hold of the internet. Kids were moving in droves from PC-based edutainment games to browser-based Flash games. We found ourselves in the right place at the right time to finally make our game development dreams come true. We formed a game development team out of web programmers, took the initiative, and proved we could make games for websites. In the beginning, the games were not always things we wanted to play ourselves, but that did not matter. We used those projects to get better and better at the craft of making games. In time, and after a lot of practice, making web games became a truly satisfying and successful endeavor. In all, as senior developers and development managers, we were involved in the creation of over 200 web games for Mattel and other properties over a 12-year span. We added even more web and mobile games after starting the website 8bitrocket.com, dedicated to teaching people to program in Flash and make their own indie web games. Here are just a few of the many games we created in that era. Retro Blaster, Hot Wheels Spin City Drive-Thru Dilemma, Hot Wheels Track Mod, Palindromes.
We made Zamboozle, and by the way, you also did a version for Turbo C.
Oh yeah, Turbo C plus. Yeah, Turbo C.
And then
plus
I made a version for Microsoft Silverlight, which of course is probably the one version that could never see the light of day ever. And then I made another version for Flash. They weren't very good. They were very basic.
Well, the DOS one that I did actually has even more choices for Yahtzee. So I added in. So this wild play in the Atari ST version gives you take your whole turn over again. We said extra roll, but really you roll three times again. Like, you don't get one extra roll. I added just one extra roll and take your turn over into that one. I also added a micro straight. So that was only three dice in a row because I had extra room on the screen. And maybe something else too. We'll get to that one at some point if we have to. It's in text mode with a bunch of colors because the text mode in DOS was really cool. You know, so you could do all kinds of colors and things. It reminded me a lot when I go back and look at sort of the Amstrad games and things like that. It runs sort of text modes and some of those. Like the DOS text mode was pretty cool for doing things like that. I never figured out how to mix text and graphics on the screen, or I would have done it in graphics if I could. That was on the PC though, so we're not really.
Yeah, I like the little windows and stuff on that one. The DOS.
Yeah, I wrote my own windowing utility.
Yeah, it was cool. I really liked that version. But what happened with STOS was we made Zamboozle, and I had all these ambitions to do like action games and stuff like that, but I ran into a technical brick wall. Right. And I think I would never have been able to get over that or anything else, or even like do 7800 games, unless we hadn't spent so much time when we got to Flash actually optimizing it. Right. So,
right.
So when I started making Flash games in the 2000s, I just kind of took the same attitude. Like, I didn't really care about the technicals. I really just wanted to make stuff. But it got to the point where we had to get super in the weeds to make the things we wanted to make. And by going there, we learned a lot of optimization techniques just for games in general. And so I used a lot of those in 7800. We did, though, get click and play for Windows 3.0 or 3.1. And it was a really cool game maker for Windows.
That I don't then think never I ever got, made anything with Windows. I really wanted to, but I never made anything with
it. You can still download it and run it. It's really interesting.
I have the original discs. I have the original everything for it.
But then I got to the point in Stoss where I couldn't do anything, so I left like three or four. I have all the graphics I made for games, but I don't have any games.
Well, but you know what? If you go to Atari Mania, the text of the original manual that we wrote, he's dropped in. So you go to AtariMania.com. Let me see if this.
What do you mean the original manual?
So there's a text file that came with it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So let me find it right now.
Remember that?
Okay. So that one.
Did he upgrade to? Is there a manual for the 2021 up there?
He does. So if you go to the Stambulas 1.2, he actually put the manual up. There's a PDF manual. So.
Oh, good. Okay, that's perfect. That's a perfect way to do it.
Yeah, Marco's really good about
keeping it. Yeah, I like that.
Marco put up the original version without me even sending it to him. He heard us talk about it on the podcast or something like that, and he grabbed it from our site because I had it up on there, and he put that zip up, and he made it work. And then he also said, hey, it only works on STs, and I said, oh, crap. So that's why I redid the whole thing and gave him one that works on all Atari ST computers, all versions.
It's fun to actually have something up.
Second game theory. The experience of using Flash made our video game aspirations finally come true, and it also led to writing several books on game development in the early part of the 2010s. In many ways, these books were inspired by Stoss and the tools we used to help us take the first steps toward our dream of programming games. We had finally done what we set out to accomplish in 1979 and wanted to show others how to do the same thing. When I wrote the introduction to our first book, The Essential Guide to Flash Games, in 2010, the experience with Zamboozle weighed heavy on my mind. I wanted to convey to the reader how important it was to never give up, and that it was very important to take what you learn in your first game and pour that knowledge and experience into the next, something that never happened with Zamboozle Poker Dice. Your first game will probably suck, I thought, but your second will be a little better. And after some time thinking, I arrived at what I call the second game theory. This is what I wrote. Second game theory. What about your first? Well, of course you need to make your first game, but inevitably your first game will not be all that you hoped it to be. It just happens. Don't blame yourself. You will cut features for time, get frustrated, and sometimes not even finish. However, this is the most important thing we want you to do. Finish your game and move on to the second. It is the only way you'll get better at making games. This is what I call the second game theory. This book is set up in a way that we believe will help you finish a game and move on to your second game. It is important to us that you actually finish your games. We love to play great games. Every time you finish a game, no matter how good it is, you get a little bit better at your craft. When you get better, we get better games to play. We get more innovative games to play. The craft of making games advances a little bit further. Your job is to finish something and move on to the next project. Move on to your second game, your third, etc. However, your first game should not be considered a prototype, a beta, an alpha, etc. It should be considered a finished product. If not, you will always be stuck on your first game, and that can lead to development hell, a place where games are tortured to death and never finished. We believe that making games is an iterative process, and it comes at two levels. First, the process of making each individual game is iterative. You code your game, you refine it, code it, refine it over and over until you mold something that you finally finish. However, the actual craft of making games is also iterative. With each game you finish, you improve your code, processes, libraries, object models, game ideas, game designs, etc. That is why it is so important to get your second game. Writing your second game means you will improve on your first, which can then be used to improve your third, etc. Again, when I wrote that, I was thinking directly about Zamboozle and how the experience of making that game and not continuing on to a second game set me back for a decade. The key to this is keep going. Even if you start with a well-intentioned but terrible dog like Zamboozle Poker Dice, it doesn't mean it'll be your only or last shot. If it's what you really want to do, don't stop. In a few cliched but still useful words, never give up. That may sound trite and stupid, but it's also true. Unless you are lucky or rich, no one is going to hand you what you want out of life. You have to treat every opportunity as a chance to do what you truly want to do. If you keep at it, you may find yourself writing a fake instruction manual for your first real game 30 years down the line. You'll enjoy every word you write as you recall those very first steps you took to create something put back into the world. You will smile to yourself, knowing that while that game might not have turned out as you wanted, it became the cornerstone of an unexpected and satisfying future you could never have predicted if you tried.
Children of the Silicon Revolution, an X generation conscripted to fight the console and home computer wars, a product of an analog 70s childhood, we came of digital age in the 80s, believing we could affect the world 8 bits at a time. Armed with joysticks, full-stroke keyboards, Jolt Cola, and MTV haircuts, we proceeded into the vertical blank. There, we stayed up late at night, devising incantations from D&D rulebooks and beginner's all-purpose symbolic instruction code. Video games were the match, and programming was the fuse, as the infinite possibilities of the digital world exploded into the internet age to come. We are Generation Atari.
Into the vertical blank.